cold outside. I thought we were done with this now that it's officially spring, but...
Ha ha.
I don't know what happened with that groundhog.
You never got the memo that you live in New York.
Not that it really has got much to do with reality, but didn't that groundhog predict an early spring?
That's what the rumor was.
Groundhog was smoking something. Man, it's not just cold, it's windy cold, so...
Sorry, Groundhog, you got it wrong.
Well, we're inside now, and we're getting settled in to basically bring some music for the next hour. I hope you're warm and comfortable as well, perhaps on a drive home or sitting at home.
Or
good,
listening on cool. The internet someplace south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Right. That's also a possibility. Well, what we're doing, of course, you know, for the next hour is we're going to be looking at an album. Heidi and I have been like... tearing our way through. I started a book project a while back. It's hard to believe I've been working on this now for probably more than a year, and I'm not moving very quickly. Let's put it that way. I decided a while ago I was going to try to write a book called The Alternative Top 40. I'm going to write 500 essays about 500 albums that never made the top 40. The ones that I consider the 500 most important or the best, starting in 1964. I've so far written, I'm just shy of 200, so I guess I'm not doing so bad, but I got about maybe 195.
Maybe you should just do 200 essays.
Huh?
Maybe you should just do 200.
If I do 200, I'm essentially done, yeah.
I know, awesome.
And I did write from 1964. Right now I'm up to about 1985. I'm trying to write them more or less chronologically, so it helps me get a feel for what's happened with the times and how things have changed. So I guess I'm on... the right track pretty much going to, because I want to get, you know, to the present, up to around 2016. By the time I'm done, it won't be 2016. That's more or less obvious. But that's the fundamental idea, is to do exactly that. Now, after I had started the book for these 500 essays about alternative albums, we started doing the radio show based upon those alternative albums. And we followed through for about the first 50 that I had done. And we did those radio shows most of last year. That's what we had pretty much been doing on Wednesdays for most of 2015. I was counting our way through the top 50, or the first 50 of the 500 alternative albums. At some point, just at the end of last year, we decided it might be a good idea to start including some of the best albums that did make the top 40.
It was a bit of a stroke of genius.
Or
madness.
Madness, really, yeah. Well, the thing is, like, obviously, to tell any story, the more information you have, the better story it's going to be. So since I was writing the 500 essays, I don't need to write essays about the other albums, but I should at least have them exist in the book as like placeholders to...
In context.
Right, to put things in context. And since I was including them and listening to them, I was like, maybe it's worthwhile to share this with the listening audience as well. So why don't we work our way through the top 500 of the top 40, catch up to where we left off, and then we'll just run them both in sync. So it's going to take us about a year to catch up, because I've got to get through about, by the time I get up to where we stopped, it's the ratio isn't always 1-to-1. In fact, there are more, in the 60s, there are more top 40 albums than non-top 40 albums that I've chosen. So if we get up to, say, number 50 of the non-top 40, we'll probably get pretty close to number 70 doing this countdown before we are able to roll. But be that as it may, we are up to number 18. We've covered 17 top 40 albums already in the chronological order. Number 18 finds us in July of 1965 with an album that reached number 2 on the Billboard charts in that summer of 1965. Our album number 18 is Summer Days and Summer Nights by the Beach Boys. Now, it was really just... few shows ago, album number 14, so that's what, four shows ago, when we featured the Beach Boys' previous album, which was called Today. That was their first album in 1965. This is their second album of the year. But people put out a lot of albums back then. The Beatles themselves had released, let's see, Beatles 6 and Rubber Soul, and helped the Beatles put out three albums in 1965.
Impressive.
Pretty incredible. That's not counting, you know, the collections, but that's three albums of brand new material. Beach Boys were on track to do the exact same thing. That previous album that we're talking about, the album that was called Today, that was number 14 in our series, marked a very significant change in style for the Beach Boys, and also in Brian Wilson's growth as a songwriter. At that point, the band had pretty much exhausted the subject of surfing.
Yeah. You know,
there's only so much you can do with that, and they had...
And they weren't really surfers themselves, were they?
No, not much. I mean, they may have flirted with it. Dennis surfed a little bit. The rest of them maybe fooled around a bit, but they were not at all the type of guys that would, you know, go to the beach and surf as we think of it today. So the whole idea of basically, you know, cashing in on the craze, it gets old after a while, and they knew that. So, you know, basically after 5 or 6 albums based upon surf music, it was, you know, they knew that they had to basically find something else to do. Brian certainly knew that anyway. They did the same thing with car songs. They did so many songs about cars that kind of got burned out as well. So it was refreshing on the album Today to hear, you know, the band tackle more personal matters on that album. The problem, though, is that their record label, Capitol, balked when they heard that the band started to shift away from material that they considered to be much more commercial.
Right.
You know, they figured that surf songs might be dumb, but, you know, they sell well. They have blatant appeal. And obviously, the label was also backed, in their opinion, by some of Brian's band members who liked the idea of being on the pop charts and thought that some of the new material that Brian was writing was just not as commercial. So as a means of, like, compliance, Brian Wilson decided that he would write his next batch of songs on a topic that could never be exhausted, songs about girls. So this album, Summer Days and Summer Nights, is more or less Brian not flexing his muscles, but trying to compromise to keep his bandmates happy, to keep his record label happy, give them what they want by giving them material that seems to be commercial and appealing, a little bit kitschy at times, quite frankly. It might lack some of the ambition of the album Today, which we played just 4 weeks ago. And it also does not have that album's continuity with weak points that pretty much seemed at times beneath the band's newly discovered range. But the thing is, the high points on this album pointed to heights that were previously you couldn't have even imagined that the Beach Boys would ever go anywhere near the stuff that's the music this brilliant. So this album has basically got the band pulling in two different directions at the same time. With this album, Brian gave his critics at Capitol and in the band what they wanted, and then was able to set himself off on a path that would be completely his own after this. In many ways, then, if you're going to basically consider it, this album, Summer Days and Summer Nights, is the last true Beach Boys album where the band, the label, and the audience got exactly what they wanted. From this point forward, things for the band would never be the same again. Brian's going to take off from this point. The next album after this will be the Pet Sounds album. And after that came the debacle that became Smiley Smile, and it all unraveled. So this is the last time that we hear the Beach Boys sounding like the Beach Boys. The album starts off with a track which was really quite simply a response song. The band, the Ad-Libs, the year before had put out a song called The Boy from New York City, and Brian dug it. So Brian figured, okay, if he's writing girl songs, he's going to come up with a tune that has to do with the same topic, only he's going to be calling it The Girl from New York City. Here's Brian's answer tune.
She come out with the best friend for the summer.
song that kicks off the album, Summer Days and Summer Nights. You can hear Brian almost bending over trying to make everybody happy by trying to keep things, you know, straightforward, simple, and somehow linked to pop culture so that everybody would feel as if, oh, yeah, you know, we're hip,
crowd
we're connected.
Pleaser.
And you know, in all honesty, I mean, the thing that made the Beach Boys so hip was when Brian didn't do that. You know,
right.
Like on the Beach Boys Today, side two, when he allowed himself to get reflective, it just showed so much growth and depth and,
yes.
and allowed his production to really soar. In a way, I feel like, you know, Brian's shackling himself a little bit. I hesitated including this album for that reason. This album was one of those albums that I was really on the fence about whether
yeah.
it should or shouldn't make the list. We'll go through it, and we can ultimately decide if you can decide for yourself if you do agree with me that I made the right choice to include it or not.
Oh, I'll let you know.
But I will say that the album starts off in a rather odd way with songs that you would think, like, I don't know. But, like, for example, the next track is called Amusement Parks USA. Now, Heidi, I know you didn't grow up in New York, however many years younger than me you are, 6 years, 9 months, and 7 days. But
who's counting
but
anyway?
Who's counting? But that being said, I remember listening to AM radio as a kid. And there was a park up in the Palisades, and I guess it was in Jersey on the cliffs. I don't remember, I was probably too young. I don't think I've ever gone there, and it wasn't particularly close to where I lived on Long Island. I remember them advertising it on AM radio all the time, and I still remember the song. Palisades has the rides, Palisades has the fun, come on over. You know, it's like this big echoey thing that was going on. And it was the type of commercial that would excite you when you heard it.
Ooh.
And it was funny because while that commercial was making inroads, a guy by the name of Freddie Cannon performed a song, had a hit with a song called Palisades Park that was a huge hit around this area. So between the commercial and that tune, there was a lot of attention that was put on Palisades Park. By the way, that song was written by Chuck Barris.
Oh, really?
The Gong Show host dude?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's the guy that wrote the song, Palisades Park, that Freddie Cannon had the hit with.
Oh.
So anyway, in the middle of all this stuff, another weird fun fact, just oddly, the Beach Boys, much later in their career, would record their own version of the song. I mean, how dumb is that? I don't know why
silly.
They would get to that point. But that's by the time they put out the album 15 Big Ones, they did a version of that song on that album. Rather ridiculous, true. But what Brian's idea here was to pretty much, like, basically rip through, like, the same way that you would on, like, the way that they did with, like, Surfing USA by grabbing, like, a Chuck Berry sort of a tune and doing that, and then basically running through different amusement parks and singing about them because it would be, again, like, a great American theme,
sure.
Link them to a bunch of things. You know, it's again, you hear Brian basically bending over, just trying to make everybody happy. Here's what he came up with. The song is called Amusement Parks USA.
Let's take your car and do Amusement Parks USA. At Palisades and Southbury Parks, the roller coasters are flying. At Euclid Beach on the flying turns, I'll bet you can't keep from smiling. Around at the park all day. The parachutes at Riverview Park will shake us up all day. And Disneyland and POV is worth a trip to LA. Watching girls in the air can really get you mad.
And I bet the laughing lady makes you laugh like mad.
Let's pick up our friends and do Amusement Parks USA.
$0.1. Come on in and see Stella the Snake Dancer.
Is it real?
She wow. take your car and mess around at the park all day.
Wow. Amusement Parks USA.
Yikes.
Obviously a weird, you know, again, it's weird, right?
Oh, it's weird. It's creepy. It's so many different things going on there.
That Barker voice is drummer Hal Blaine, apparently,
oh.
who they brought in to do that sort of thing. What's really obvious here is that while Brian is trying to keep all of his bandmates and the label happy, he's basically condoning their ignorance in some ways.
Right.
I mean, if you remember last week, the album we played last week was The Birds with the album, you know, Mr. Tambourine Man.
Mm-hmm.
And that had sort of changed the face of what was happening. Now, that's a California band.
Right.
And now you've got this band that is bringing in elements of the Beatles, elements of folk music, and mixing them together. And here, the Beach Boys are almost stoically, you know, avoiding that.
Right. Absolutely.
And they're ending up in a spot that making them look dangerously unhip.
Right, outdated and
this point of time, right. So this is like, you know,
that's
the off-putting part of this album. Even the next track, and this is basically Brian coming straight from the heart. Nobody was a bigger Phil Spector fan than Brian. And he wanted to basically learn everything that he possibly could pick up from Phil Spector. He said that basically just, you know, he was once in the studio with Phil. And he says, just by being in the room for about 2 hours, you know, Phil Spector seemed like he was like wanted to retain some secret element about what it was that he was doing, creating his wall of sound. But Brian said that he saw everything that he needed to learn. He saw it in 2 hours, just
wow.
Standing there. He could just basically see by seeing who we had in the studio, how he had set up the session. Brian pretty much said that he would be able to do it for himself. And that's pretty much exactly what he did with this track. One of the biggest Phil Spector productions was Then He Kissed Me, a song that became a huge hit for the Crystals. Well, Brian, as a sense of tribute, figured that he would do the exact same song, putting his own spin on it with his own sense of production. Of course, sung from a male perspective. This is with Al Jardine on lead vocals. With this sex switched around, it's simply called Then I Kissed Her.
Well, I walked up to her and I asked her if she wanted to dance. She looked awful nice and so I hope she might take a chance.
True to the original.
Very much so.
And again, at this point, if you think about it, I mean, anybody who makes an album, you know that your intention would always be, you know, lead with your best stuff. Come out of the gate with your best stuff, so, you know, because that is going to make, you know, it, people hold on. They're going to want to hear more. And it's really strange because, you know, Brian has got this album structured not like that at all.
Oddly.
I mean, basically, he's got, you know, the album really finds its, doesn't find its real momentum until side two. It's rather odd. Now, the next song is relatively interesting. It's a pretty good song. It's actually, I think, maybe the best that we've heard up to this point. It's called Salt Lake City. It's a song that they wrote about, that Brian wrote about Salt Lake City, simply because they, at that point in time, the band was really popular in the Utah area, specifically in the city of Salt Lake City, for one reason or another.
Oddly. Well, they were pretty wholesome sounding, so.
Probably has a lot to do with it, right. Now, Brian wasn't touring with the band at this point in time. Johnston was. I forget what's his first name. Bruce Johnston, right. So Bruce was on tour with Brian. Taking Brian's place for the live shows, and the band would come back with stories about how great their shows were in Salt Lake City. So Brian wrote the song. But the other thing that's interesting is that when the band came off of the road, it's not like Bruce Johnston just disappeared. He was still hanging out. So he'd end up being in the studio with the band, and Brian liked him. Brian thought he was a good guy, thought he was very talented. So Brian uses him on this record. He sings as a band member, but he couldn't be in any of the photo shoots because he had a different contract.
Oh.
So they had to basically retain the image of the five original members, with Bruce being the uncredited sixth member. In fact, on the album cover itself, it only shows four Beach Boys, not six. Obviously, Bruce not being there because he couldn't, but Al Jardine also not being in the shot because he was sick that day. And rather than wait for him, they just went ahead and took the photo of the band.
Thanks a lot, guys.
On a sailboat, exactly, without him. There are shots from that exact same photo shoot with Bruce Johnston in the shot. But like I said, that was not allowed to be used for contractual reasons. Anyway, here's the song then that Brian wrote, tipping as a tip of a hat to Salt Lake City, named after that city.
Down in Utah, the guys and I dig a city called Salt Lake. It's got the grooviest kids, that's why we never get tired of Salt Lake.
Brian's arrangement work on that song, production as well. I mean, pretty cool arrangement there, with things breaking down for the a cappella bit,
right.
And the drums to bring it back in, of course, with the horns propelling it. So
a lot going on.
Yeah, you're beginning to. This is where the album begins to pick up some speed. This next track, actually, on the album, this is really incredible because this is their ninth studio album. so in their career already. It's only 1965, and this is their ninth studio album. Their 10th album, including the live album. So imagine
couldn't
that.
Get them out there fast enough, huh?
Yeah, 10 albums in like 3 years. That's stunning, but that's the rate that you turned albums out in that era. It's something else. But okay, with all that behind them, and with Carl as a permanent member of the band, and with Carl having such a good voice, how weird is it to think that this next song is the first time that Carl sings lead? Because from this point forward, Carl sings lead on a lot of songs. But up until now, nothing. It's so weird. So this is Carl. And I'm not exactly sure if it has anything to do with it, but you can definitely hear a Beatles influence on Brian in this song. It's called Girl Don't Tell Me. The Beatles' recent hit around this time was Ticket to Ride. And tell me if you can hear perhaps Brian basically saying, maybe I could turn that around a little bit and come up with a little bit of something of my own on this song called Girl Don't Tell Me.
Hi, little girl, it's me. Don't you know who I am? I met you last summer when I came up to stay with my friend. I'm the guy. It's getting long and your shorts, they sure fit you fine. I'll bet you went out every night during good school time. But this time I'm not gonna count on you. I'll see you this summer and forget you when I go back to school.
I would say, and once I hear the guitar, if I'm like, that's a lot like Ticket to Ride.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Although, obviously, Brian was not intending it to be a hit single. He just didn't give it that sort of a push with his production either. Now, up until this point of the album, we've played five tracks already. I would say that, you know, there's plenty that we've heard already that is either, you know, very derivative or ordinary. Nothing there that I would say that would basically qualify this as one of the better albums to include on the top 500 of the top 40 list. This is where I say it changes. The next five songs compensate for that. See if you can agree with me or not. For example, we'll start with this track. Now, the last time we played the album today, one of the songs that we heard on that album was Help Me, Rhonda. In an early version that was, for some reason, well, they spell Rhonda differently on that album without the H. Big deal. But the song wasn't completely, for one reason or another, Brian wanted to go back and revisit it. Felt that it really ended up not basically reaching its potential. So he decided, here it on the following album, to record the song again, back to back, on the very next album, only a few months later. So you'd think, okay, this is going to be another dumb idea, maybe, or another track that's going to end up falling on its face. Well, it didn't. But Brian did this time. It's stunning what he came up with. The vocal arrangements are through the roof perfect. Probably the single most sung along song in the history of the Beach Boys, which might mean in the history of the universe, because, you know, Beach Boys are one of the most sing-along bands that you could ever. Song went to number one in the summer of 65, the re-recorded version of Help Me Rhonda.
Well, since she put me down, I bet I'm doing in my head. I come in late at night, and in the morning I just lay in bed. But Rhonda, you look so fine, and my love wouldn't take much time for you to help me, Rhonda, help me get her out of my heart.
Have it a number one hit for the Beach Boys. Their second number one hit in their career at that point with that version of Help Me Rhonda. So all of a sudden now already that elevates this album by itself. With a song that's got that much energy and that much great sing-along
power. I wonder
power
how much grief they gave him when he said he wanted to revisit this in the studio.
You just think, like, really? We just did it. You know, I want to do it again. But, I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Right.
Now, with that song sitting at number one, it's amazing to me that this next track didn't do even better. Not that you can do better than number one, but I mean, you could be like maybe be number one and stay there for, you know,
a longer period of time.
In this case, maybe a couple of years, because that's just how great this song was. Like, essentially, this as it gets back to the idea of the original theme of what Brian was probably what Brian said he was going to try to do to make the label and everybody else happy. He said that he was. This is his own quote. It says it goes back to 1965. When I was just sitting in my apartment wondering how to write a song about girls because I love girls.
He's honest.
He goes, I mean, everybody loves girls. So I got the notion and started writing this song. But then I said to myself that this needs more than what I've written. It needs some kind of an introduction that would be a total departure from how the song sounds. And yet it would somehow lead into the melody of the song. And that's how we end up with one of what I consider to be, like, you know, one of the most incredible symphonic introductions really ever written in the history of pop music. Brian himself says that this is the favorite thing. The first 10 seconds is the best thing that he has ever written in his entire life.
Wow.
And
that's saying quite a bit.
It's hard to deny it, because if it can still be deeply moving 50 years later, you know you've hit on something which is literally symphonic in the strength that it has. And he did it in 10 seconds. Amazing. The song is California Girls. California Girls stopped at number 3 on the pop charts. Amazingly, it's hard to believe that wasn't
the
number one hit.
That is incredible.
What an amazing piece of music. Now, the song on the B-side of the single is equally as ambitious. It's got that same sort of an orchestral feel. And this is, you know, Brian might have been trying to do everything he could to keep everybody else happy, but Brian would still be Brian, and every now and then he would basically, you know, like the songs that we're on today, this song sounds like it really belongs on Pet Sounds. It's got everything, all the elements of Pet Sounds on this track. You can hear, in this instance, maybe some Burt Bacharach influence.
Okay.
In the song, you could almost imagine, you know, Dionne Warwick singing this one with this, again, fabulous arrangement and just great words. It's called "Let Him Run Wild."
When I watched you walk with him, tears filled my eyes. I couldn't stand his life. And now before he tries it, I hope you realize it.
Let him run wild, he don't care.
Let
him run wild, he'll find out.
Let him
run wild, he don't care.
Can't you know?
It's almost like it's a whole different album all of a sudden. Right?
Yeah, it's like, a different planet even.
It's like it just shifts so drastically and it gets so amazingly great so fast that it's
he probably had to bury that, though, because everybody was thinking, oh, no one's going to like it. It doesn't sound like Beach Boys stuff.
To me, I mean, well, there, I mean, that this pretty much, that if that album was dropped in the middle of Pet Sounds, it would have actually, it would have been good for the album, you know, because that song is that strong and great.
Oh, yeah.
And the same with this next track, this next song also. It's just more brilliant songwriting. And again, you know, probably, you know, a personal song of Brian's that just seems to have a lot of awesome energy, like upbeat energy for a change, without self-doubt. This is called You're So Good to Me. Past four tracks show that Brian didn't have to follow trends at all. In fact, it was much better when he didn't. While everybody else was trying to figure out how to catch up to the Beatles or Bob Dylan, you know, all the birds with what they did, if Brian had been able to basically, you know, conjure all of his strength to do just that, he would have been he was an entity unto himself. he was. It's just that, you know, so much, so often, and unfortunately in the beginning of this album, it got watered down. But you can see how quickly he bounces back,
right,
and
he
recovers. It's really this, like you said, this album is, you know, two different stories, two different worlds almost. Next up is a track that's actually an instrumental, a beautiful song, a Beach Boys song without Beach Boys harmonies, without lyrics or anything. You know, again, Brian staying a step ahead of the curve. Here is a song called Summer Means New Love. Thank you. yet another really unique strength of Brian's. I mean, the Beach Boys were really the only group that would be putting out music as beautiful and as orchestrated as that. You know, the Beatles would rely on George Martin, and the Beatles weren't doing anything like that at that time. Nothing was coming out of England like that. Nothing was coming out of Motown like that. It was yet another unique strength of Brian's that he was able to do that. And it was like, really, I'd say that it was that run of five songs that we just heard that made me say, you know what, I can't take this off because the good stuff is just too good. And I'll feel guilty if I didn't include it. So now I think I've at least justified my argument for why this album is included. The remaining tracks, there are two, are still interesting. The next one, rather in a weird way, if you know the history of the band, you know that there's been a tremendous amount of problems that the band had with their father as their manager, selling the rights to the publishing, but without telling Brian at all about it, and all the and the humiliations that had gone on. It's so deep in their story, and if you've seen the movies or read the books, it's really compellingly weird and horribly sad, some of the things that the brothers had gone through at the hands of their father, Murray. Well, Brian writes this song, and considering the history, it's a little bit disconcerting. It's called I'm Bugged at My Old Man.
I'm bugged at my old man, 'cause he's making me stay in my room.
Darn my dad.
I came in a little late, and my old man, he just blew his mind.
Blew it bad.
Why did he sell my He cut off my hair last night in my sleep. I wish I could see outside, but he tacked up boards on my window.
Gosh, it's dark.
I can't hit the surf, can't drag, can't do a doggone thing.
Wish I could.
I tried to call up my chick, but he jerked my phone right out of the wall. They gave me some breadcrumbs and a little glass of water, and they're out there eating steak.
Sounds so good.
I listened to my radio, but he took it and he's using it in his own room.
Now it's gone.
I wish I could do some homework, but I got suspended from school.
Blew my cool.
I'm bugged at my old man, and he doesn't even know where it's at.
Wow. That kind of
amazes
me. A little
bizarre.
It's really a bizarre song, but it's very entertaining. And, with some of the history, to have that there, it's like, well, that's an interesting way to almost close out an album. Brian basically does close it out with an amazing a cappella arrangement, something that he was obviously a big fan of the Four Freshmen and such. And he just put together this short piece of music, a little tag to end the album. Gorgeous track called End Your Dreams Come True.
You're so sleepy, wish that he could stay. Love him so. Ooh.
that wraps the album. So I hope I made my point as for why I do consider this to be one of the best albums. If you buy the album now, by the way, I mean, with CDs, the way that they've been made, they've actually double packaged the Beach Boys albums from this era. So if you could pick up the album today and Summer Days on the same disc, back to back, two albums for the price of one, with bonus tracks, including this track, which I want to play now because it was a single from the exact same era. It's the single that came out right on the heels of the album, and now it's considered a part of the album, the Beach Boys single called The Little Girl I Once Knew. Show dedicated to the album Summer Days and Summer Nights by the Beach Boys is concluded. Hope you had a good time. I hope it was fun and informative. It was almost like hearing two completely different albums, and the second one being infinitely better than where we started. I'm just glad to know that that it did improve so much. But I've got just a couple minutes left, if that, maybe just a minute and a half. But I have like a track sitting here that we can play to end the show. Rather interestingly, you might know the artist M. Ward. He put out an album just maybe about a month ago called More Rain. And on it, he does a cover of a Beach Boys song that we just played on the album Summer Days and Summer Nights. So it's a good way to go out with. Let's hear M. Ward's his version of the song You're So Good to Me. Take care, everybody. We'll be back Friday with Simon and Garfunkel.
Small and you're such a ball. I'm glad you're mine. You're so good to me. How come you are? You hold my hand when you understand that I get in a bad mood. You're so good to me. And I love it, yeah.
baby.